Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You ready? We are.
You ready?
Yes. Hour number three, Darren, Donica, Chase, Tim Hasselbeck, this time every Wednesday. Tim, how you doing?
Great. How are you?
Doing fantastic. What's new and exciting in your world?
You know, just start of the school year, sports going on, you know. A lot of good stuff, man.
It's not,
a lot of good
stuff.
Hoping that it all works out. Yeah.
Exactly. Fingers crossed, no doubt. I'm going to start on a little bit, not upbeat, but just bring something to light, see if you've seen it, and just what are your thoughts. There is a very lengthy article written in the Washington Post about Daniel Snyder and the Washington football team and some of their behavior in the workplace over the years. And, Tim, to put it mildly, it is not a good look on that franchise and the owner, Daniel Snyder. One, have you seen it? Two, if all of this is true, why can't the NFL, like other leagues have done, step in and tell him, you need to be out as an owner? This is a really, really, really bad look. You have created a horrible work environment and culture, and it's not acceptable in this league. Can't they make him sell?
Yeah, so I haven't read the article yet. Aware of it. I think I've seen kind of bits and pieces. So I don't know the whole details of kind of what's alleged in it. Could the league force him to sell? I mean, I think you go back to the Panther situation, Jerry Richardson, some of the stuff that was going on there. You know, whether, you know, forgetting kind of how that all went down, whether that was forced or whether it was kind of just everyone was aware that they were in a situation where it was like that just needed to happen. I'm sure that there can be mounting pressure, to make those things happen. So, you know, I don't know that that's where we are. Again, without having read it, you know,
sure,
the entire article or knowing, I mean, this kind of gets into some of these situations about, you know, you believe in the accuser or you're not, or I just know this. I've worked in environments where, people have made allegations, and I'm, you know, kind of familiar at times people have made allegations, and it's like, well, you know, that their characterization of it or some of the details of it, you know, some parts of it may be true, some parts of it may be, you know, really sensationalized, and, you know, and in some cases, you know, not true. So, when these things happen and you go, okay, here's the owner. Like, I'll just give you my interactions when I was a member of the Washington Redskins, you know, at the time. He was rarely on team flights. You know, he was rarely at the team facility. He was, you know, it wasn't like there was a ton of interaction with the owner when you're a player or if you're an employee that is at the facility every day. Like, would he be there sometimes? Sure. But, you know, would you go long stretches without ever coming in contact with him? Absolutely you would. So, you know, I think it's kind of one of those situations where you go, well, you know, he's the owner of the team. The culture, you know, he's ultimately responsible for the culture in the organization. If he's aware of stuff that's going on and not fixing it, yeah, then 100% he's in charge. He's at fault. But if there are things that are going on that he's unaware of, then, you know, then I think that there's other people in place in the organization that work below him that, you know, they probably are at fault. I don't know if I'm, you know, so I guess just what I'm saying is, like, because you own the team, you know, that doesn't mean you know everything that's going on there. You know, if you're a principal of a school and there's something going on in a classroom and the teacher doesn't make you aware of it, well, then as the principal, you don't know. You might be responsible, but you didn't know because the teacher who was responsible didn't tell you. So I just know that there was very little interaction with a lot of people with ownership on nearly every team I was on. So, you know, I think sometimes it can be overstated the amount of interaction an employee has with ownership.
Well, I guess to your point, I would also say that didn't we kind of stop letting coaches use that as their excuse, right? Especially in college basketball when all these recruiting violations and all the stories that we would hear on these coaches come out and say, I don't know anything about that. They've got all their assistants do it, and they just say, well, I don't know. You keep me out of it, but they know what's like, you can't use that as an excuse.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you're the CEO.
I understand. I think the difference in something like that is this, is in college recruiting, a coach doing that, you know, like there's a shared goal and mission, you know, with that.
Okay.
You know, if you could prove that the shared goal and mission between employees of Daniel Snyder's and Daniel Snyder's were to create an environment of sexual harassment and that type of thing, then, I can't imagine that there's a shared mission in that. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think that that's, I don't know him well, but I will also say this. Whenever I saw him, okay, like when he was around, there were very few times that it wasn't he and his wife. You know, like, you know, when he was at a game, or met us at the airport because he was maybe flying a different plane home or something like that. Oftentimes, you know, he was traveling with his family.
Okay. Well, I knew you could, you know, lend some insight. I just wanted to get your opinion.
Yeah, and listen, that doesn't mean I'm not pouring water on any of these things. Again, I haven't read it, but I'm not pouring water on any of that stuff. I just know that, like, I kind of saw a headline saying that, you know, the finger is being directly pointed at him. And, I could just tell you, maybe if you're the head coach is going to have plenty of interaction with the owner, I'm sure. Some teams more than others. But, like, this idea that pretty much everybody in the organization is having constant, you know, interactions with ownership, you know, I've never seen that be the case somewhere.
Okay, let's get a little fantasy help. So our draft is coming up next weekend, not this weekend. So Chase and Willie.
Good for you for saying hour and not mine.
Did you notice? Did you notice I did that? Because I knew if I said my league draft, you would just destroy me if I said that.
It's really a no-win situation. I was making the comment on it either way.
But you still went there. Even when I did it correctly, you still went there.
Yeah.
So Willie and Chase have the second pick. I have the fourth pick. This is a standard fantasy football league. Advice on, I think second is going to be pretty easy for you to answer, but what about me at four, but take it with both?
Well, what is your, is it standard scoring?
Pretty standard. It's a standard league. It's not. I just did a draft last week and it was PPR. This is more of a standard format.
Well, the standard on ESPN.com is PPR scoring. So you're saying at four?
This is not, it's like 6 points a touchdown, you know, 100 yards rushing, 300 yards passing. Yeah, just, it's that, it's not.
It's more old school, I would say.
Yeah, it's not points per catch.
Okay. So you're saying at four, where do you go? Well, who do we think is gone?
So I'm assuming McCaffrey would go one or Barkley would go one and then they would get the other.
I think who's got the number one pick in our league, I see them going with Mahomes or Lamar.
Oh, really?
So I think McCaffrey's available.
And Tim, just so you know, Chase and I are a team. Chase and I are a team, and I'm really having a discussion with Chase because he would really like to take Teddy Bridgewater with the second overall pick. I'm trying to hold him up.
Well, I don't know if you saw the Gardner Minshew Bud Light ad, but people maybe
that was good. That was pretty good. That was pretty good.
You know, I think that
there have been so many, you know, kind of studies, and then, you know, the fantasy group at ESPN has done a great job with this over the years of, and you know, guys that, you know, are in that department have kind of made the case multiple times. Like, hey, if you went, say you went quarterback with the number one overall pick, right? Like, there just used to be the conversation with Aaron Rodgers, and people could make it with Mahomes or Lamar. They'd say, listen, you know, you're not going to lose your, you know, the season because you drafted Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson. You're not going to lose it. But, you know, typically the difference between like the number one scoring fantasy quarterback and then the next five guys, like, is not as significant as the delta between, you know, Saquon Barkley and then the next available running back that you would be getting, right? So the difference between those, the running back scoring versus the quarterback scoring, the drop-off is much more significant at running back. So I've never, again, you won't lose your league taking a quarterback early, but you are so much better off. Like, if you look at, like, the consensus, like, you know, top 300 type ranking stuff, I think you get all the way to number six before you get a position other than running back.
Okay, but let's – okay, so for just the sake of this discussion, okay, I guess let's start with Barkley or McCaffrey?
McCaffrey goes one.
Let's say that it's Mahomes. Let's play it out. Let's say Mahomes goes one in this league, because I know who Chase is talking about. We know who's the number one pick or who the owner is, and so that's not out of the question for him to do that. So would you suggest they go McCaffrey or go Barkley?
I would take Barkley.
Okay. Oh, you would take Barkley?
Ooh. Okay. I thought you'd say McCaffrey.
Okay, so now let's play it out again. And it goes Mahomes, okay, Barkley or McCaffrey.
Barkley. Mm-hmm.
And the other one goes three, which then leaves me a pretty, you know, okay, I've got choices at four. Where do I go at four?
Running back.
Okay, I know. Like Elliott, Kamara, Cook, like where are you going running back? What's the pick?
I'm probably taking Ezekiel Elliott.
Okay, so you would take Elliott in that spot. You said probably. Why did you say I would probably?
Well, because, like, I would, you know, if it's more weighted towards – so this is not a PPR league. If it's not a PPR league, then I am definitely taking Elliott. If it's a PPR league, you know, then I think that discussion – you know, I think it still ends up, you know, being almost a wash with Barkley and McCaffrey, because I think Barkley does, you know, catch a bunch of balls. But, like you know, if it, you know, Alvin Kamara maybe ends up being a little bit more of a conversation, you know, over Elliott, or, you know, it's a harder discussion at that point. But yeah, I'm taking Ezekiel Elliott there.
If you're in a non PPR league, Tim, what is the gap in your mind between Elliott and Derrick Henry?
I would say that I don't think it's huge, but I feel a little bit, I feel like Elliott's a little bit more of a known commodity with consistency, you know. Mm-hmm. And that may not be fair to Derrick Henry, but I think he's probably a little bit more of a known commodity in terms of, like, you know, guaranteed catches. And look, and part of that is because, you know, think about the last few years for Derrick Henry. Like, it took a little while for things to get going, right? It was like, what was his role? You know, how many times is he going to touch it? Does he come off the field on third down? Because Ezekiel Elliott, I think, plays more snaps. I think that you've known for the past few years, like, hey, we want him to carry the ball 20-plus times a game. And not that the Titans don't feel that way with Derrick Henry, but I feel like it's taken them the last couple of years some time to get there. I think that would probably give me a little bit of ease making that decision. But I think it could be close.
Tim, we've spent a lot of time since last year ended about what's next for Ben Roethlisberger. It's certainly been a long road back. I guess there's a docuseries that's been put out. I think his wife is putting it more from her perspective and the challenges with that. How do you feel about this? This is, I guess, a partial fantasy question, but also just an AFC picture question. We know what the Steelers look like with Ben Roethlisberger as opposed to not having him. Everything look good for a bounce back for him, or do you still have your doubts with his age right now?
I think it looks good for a bounce back for him. You know, I understand. You just look at the guys in his draft class. I mean, Eli's done. Rivers is barely holding on. Like, it, it's not the same, as you get 38 years old and you've had a major elbow surgery. But there's just been so much optimism coming out of, kind of like Steelers camp in terms of how they feel about Ben. And you go back to his 2018, it's the best year that he ever had. So I think, and again, kind of alluding to a fantasy perspective, a lot of people talking about how you need to carry two quarterbacks in fantasy this year because who knows? Like, you might find out morning of a game with no injury report diagnosis that, like, a guy's out because of COVID. Well, Ben Roethlisberger, I think, is ranked outside the top 15, in terms of consensus ranks at ESPN.com. And, for a guy that the last time he played a full season threw for over 5,000 yards to be ranked that low, I think he's like a great kind of one of these guys that he's ranked really low, but he could end up having an amazing year. And, I've been on record. If he is healthy, if he is the Ben of 2018, that's a Super Bowl contending team, even in the AFC with the Ravens and the Chiefs.
Wow. Yeah, I think that is something.
They were 8-8 last year, Willie. They're 8-8 last year with Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph, and just a disaster at the quarterback position. All kinds of injuries. They have a really good offensive line. They have a good back. They're so fast on defense right now. And they're really well coached. That's a good football team.
That's an important thing for Titans fans to consider, because even though there's another spot in there, we have seen plenty of teams who have made a nice run and then regress the next year. Jacksonville would be an example that comes to mind, but there's plenty over the years. I'm sure that's something Mike Vrabel has stressed with the mental toughness part. You can't assume that just because you've had some success that you'll continue to have success, especially in this league.
Yeah, we do something, we used to do this thing on NFL Live, basically five in, five out. Like, every year there's five teams in and five teams out, from the previous season. I think it went on, it went on for like over a decade that was the case. And so, I think that the people that voted this year on it, I wasn't one of them, but I think there were a fair number of analysts that, when you're choosing teams that are in and teams that are out, like, the Titans end up being one of those teams sometimes that go, was it real? Was that just kind of they caught fire just at the right time and it was late, and Tannehill played the best he's ever played and that type of thing. And there are people that kind of feel that way about them. So yeah, I'm sure that, as Mike Vrabel kind of prepares for the season and understands that, yeah, there is another playoff spot. I think the challenge is, especially as you lose your defensive coordinator and there's obvious changes with your team, how do you improve to not let that happen?
Tim Hasselbeck is with us, ESPN NFL analyst, college football analyst, joins us every Wednesday at noon. So, Tim, with the Titans last year, we saw an example of a player that showed, okay, change of scenery was good for them, and they gave him a long-term deal. It's Ryan Tannehill. So I want to equate that to a player that's on this roster now, and tell me if you've seen an example of this in your days of a wide receiver, Corey Davis, fifth overall pick. He hasn't lived up to that moniker. He's been okay. He's shown flashes, but he hasn't lived up to that fifth overall pick. And so I know Vrabel has been complimentary of him since he was taken off PUP and how he's practiced. And I watched a practice where he looked pretty good, but again, that's practice. So what is it that you think can change with him from what you know, what you've seen, that says, all right, he's going to be a go-to guy? Is it just the injuries that have plagued him in his career, similar to Tannehill, or is it in between the years or a combination of the two?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of all those things. But so you bring up a good point. Like, okay, so find the guy that was drafted that high that it went on to work somewhere else. And so some of these guys, in terms of where they're drafted, you know, it won't totally be applicable. But, you know, Brandon Lloyd, I don't know if you remember Brandon Lloyd, but, like, mm-hmm. he was a guy that's, like, didn't work, kind of bounced around, had a couple amazing seasons, was clearly talented, but it kind of needed to find some change of scenery situations in order to, you know, have success. You know, Sammy Watkins probably, you know, qualifies to be in that group somewhat, from the sense of, like, you know, in many cases, kind of some similarity to Corey Davis. Maybe the quarterback play wasn't great, suffered through some injuries, and then kind of gets into a different environment is significantly better. But I think you have to look around. I think if you look around, you know, pretty hard and be pretty thorough to find guys that, like, you know, that it didn't eventually click in year three, right? I mean, it's hard. I mean, I don't know if you guys have anybody off the top of your head that's sticking out, but, like, to me, those are the only names that kind of come up.
Right.
And, you know, and even other players that have bounced around, but like Ted Ginn. Like, Ted Ginn's had a nice career. He's been in the league a long time, but, you know, it's been different everywhere he's gone. So, you know, I think it can be a combination of things. It can be a combination of, look, he has battled some injuries, and it's been kind of unfortunate, not super serious stuff, but it's cost him time. Then an offense that maybe, you know, wasn't the best fit to have a young wide receiver really excel. Had a quarterback that, you know, he was trying to prove himself, and that didn't really work out. And then, oh, by the time that, like, you feel healthy and you're getting your groove, look, they've drafted somebody that, you know, is showing up day one and producing. And so now he was not featured in the offense the way that somebody that's a top 10 pick typically gets featured in an offense. So, you know, I think all of those things can contribute to not producing like the number five overall pick. So, you know, it's not like a real direct answer on it, but, you know, I think some of those things are unfortunate. Some of the things, you know, maybe were a little bit out of his control, but, you know, some of them were in his control. And, you know, I don't know when you get that next opportunity to kind of prove that you can be that guy.
Obviously, A.J. Brown has to do it again. He has to replicate what he did in his rookie year in his second year. But does having A.J. Brown have the success that he had, does that actually in some ways take some pressure off of Corey Davis of, okay, maybe he hasn't lived up to the fifth overall pick, but here's this kid, the second round pick that's come in. He has planted his flag of being the number one wide receiver, and so now – Corey Davis just has to go out and play. Does that make sense that maybe it's taken some pressure off?
Yeah, well, I think it can work both ways, Chase. There's part of it that says, all right, hey, listen, you don't have to be the guy, right? Like, we found a guy. You don't have to be the alpha number one, you know, here we go. It's like, hey, you're the leadoff hitter or you can bat seventh. Like, some guys like batting seventh because they're like, oh, I don't have to be the leadoff hitter. It's much harder to hit in that spot than it is to bat seventh. Take some of the pressure off of me. You know, but the flip side of that is this. The success of A.J. Brown, I think in some ways magnifies the fact that, you know, that Corey Davis hasn't done what A.J. Brown has been able to do. So, you know, I think that's the... You know, I think it depends on does A.J. Brown's success lead more people to question why Corey Davis hasn't had more success? Does it draw more attention to that? Does it make Corey feel like, man, like I'm getting passed up by a guy that's younger than me that was drafted after me? Or does it kind of give him some freedom to kind of relax and go play? And I don't think you really know, you know, until you see how he's used in the offense and how he, you know, kind of reacts to, you know, no longer – kind of entering the season as the number one guy.
I'll apply this to Ryan Tannehill, but I guess it can be a general question with a quarterback. But how much does the relationship between the offensive coordinator and the quarterback change once that quarterback has basically come in, taken the job, earned the trust of the coaching staff like Tannehill did, and has basically let everybody know through his play that he's the guy. Does the coaching relationship change between the two at all?
It totally changes. When Ryan, you know, got here a little over a year ago, they weren't coaching him necessarily. You know, they're coaching Marcus, and he's in the room, you know? And so he's listening right to somebody else get coached. I mean, that's how it works. You know, like, Logan Woodside isn't the guy that's getting, you know, coached and prepared. And, like, that's not what's going on. Like, they're getting Ryan ready now. And so everyone else there, you know, is listening to the other coaching. You know, and that's a bit of an exaggeration, but it's pretty much how it is. So, yeah, the relationship changes because now the interaction is between, you know, your quarterback coach and the quarterback, or the offensive coordinator and the quarterback, rather than, hey, you're just kind of, you know, on the fringes of that conversation. So, you know, there's much more communication. There's, you know, much more interaction. And, you know, I think what you hope is that, you know, there's a better rapport. There's more trust. There's, you know, a deeper bond and connection and, you know, an understanding of each other. Like, those are the things that you hope, you know, all happen, you know, through that. But there's no question it's very different. I mean, you go back to, you know, a year ago, and it, you know, Ryan Tannehill was saying, look, I just got to understand my role and be supportive of Marcus. You know, it's the, and then I think probably in some ways was, you know, suppressing, you know, some things that he probably would have wanted to do as a leader on the football team and how we interacted with teammates. You know, well, now the gloves are off with that stuff. Like, it is Ryan's team, and it is, you know, now he's needed to assert himself and be that way and, you know, really in some senses be an extension of, you know, Arthur Smith and the rest of the coaching staff.
Looks like Bears running back David Montgomery was carted off the field today, a groin injury. Speaking of that, as we wrap this up, Tim, do you think Trubisky is going to lose his job? Is it going to be Foles, week one starter?
I think he keeps his – I think he starts the season. Trubisky does. It's better for Chicago if Trubisky's the starter. And you don't have any preseason games. So, you know, I don't know how you beat somebody out in this environment. I mean, we've been practicing 1 week, and we've got a game in less than 3 weeks, right? So I don't know how you beat somebody out. I think they're going to give Mitch the chance to be the guy, and I think he'll have to lose the job. That's an unpopular take, by the way, but that's how I think it's going to go there.
Okay. Good stuff as always. Appreciate it. You have a great rest of your week, and we'll do it next Wednesday.
All right, cool. See you, fellas.
All right, that is Tim Hasselbeck. ESPN NFL analyst and our analyst, our expert, every Wednesday starting at noon. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase. ESPN 102.5, The Game. Speaking of hockey, Chris Mason coming up at 1 o'clock. Good stuff from Tim Hasselbeck, as always, every Wednesday on the program. Don't forget to tune in this Friday. You should tune in every day, but especially this Friday, because all day we're going to be celebrating 9 years of ESPN 102.5 The Game. Yeah, 9-year birthday on Friday, and there's going to be prizes to all you loyal listeners out there, including a Predators Winter Classic jersey, or I should say jerseys, plural, Titans memorabilia, Nashville SC jersey and scarf, $100 gift cards from Dunkin' Donuts, Hal Gill is not eligible for that, and Party Foul, and much, much more. Also be giving away at least one prize every hour starting at 6 a.m. all the way to 6 p.m. For more details, go to thegamenashville.com. Game's birthday party is brought to you by Wholesale Link, powered by RumbleOn.com. Looking forward to that on Friday. Good stuff from Tim.
Yeah.
As always.
We hit a lot of different things with them, too.
Sure did.
We did. I think it's going to be very interesting to see kind of how this first month looks, right? You've got the dynamic. We talked about this yesterday. The Titans are not going to see any fans in the stands in their first three games in the month of September, two on the road, Denver and Minnesota, and none here. And so you've got that dynamic, which has got to be odd for these guys, literally playing in front of no one. And then you've got the dynamic of, you know, the off season, there was nothing for the most part, right? You've got a weird training camp. There was no preseason games. And you just wonder, like, how all this is going to translate out. That's why I went into – we talked a little fantasy with Tim. My draft last weekend and the drafts I have remaining. Like, I don't really know just how much you can study, because I think it's going to be so much luck involved this year. And I know a lot of people would say, well, there's luck every year. And I get that. There is a certain element of luck. Things have to go your way. But truly, how could you predict how in the world this season is going to play out when it comes to, like, strategy fantasy football-wise? I just don't see it.
You can't.
I know.
You just have. I honestly think you just have to go into it, even though it's not a normal year, but you have to semi-think that way and just hope for the best. But it's certainly I do wonder if, you know, you're going to have, you know, just a little bit of a different strategy, but I don't see how you can, just because of the unknowns.
Do you think the ones that we've grown accustomed to really having good info, like Matthew Berry or whoever you want to say, are the frontline people who make a living on fantasy info and fantasy research, how different, how much they've had to adjust, how much less info are they getting to compile all of these lists that we go off of when we draft, right? The power rankings, the position rankings, all of these things. I'm curious about that.
Well, I don't believe it's less info, Willie. I just believe it's just going to be, like, the data is still there. It's not like you can't, you know, it's kind of
like do they have a real feel for who's getting the reps at practice? Maybe they don't go off of, you know, who's getting the ball, or who's doing well in the preseason games, but it just seems like there's a little less access than you would normally get.
Well, you don't have preseason games, right? Which I know a lot of times you're not judging a whole lot because starters don't play that much in preseason. But there is at least – it's something. It's at least data. It's something you can see with the eyes. You don't have – quite honestly, you know, I think the best things that they've had in camps, as you guys know because we've been there, is just the two teams practicing against each other. I think some really good stuff comes out when teams practice together during training camp, because you get a lot of coverage. Like when the Patriots came out, there was a ton of coverage, right? Whether it was locally or on the national stage, there's a lot of eyeballs watching in. Plus you have the fans and you're doing a lot of things. And so you kind of see kind of what's going on. I think you get a little bit more accurate and you're doing, you know, every day's pads, where now some days, you know, they're not having pads. It's just different. And so I just think there's less to tell of how this is going to play out. And by the way, there's data, but how do you know who's going to be affected? How much is the injury rate? Is it going to be higher this year because of everything we just said? Is their guys going to go away because they test positive? Like, there's no way to predict that, no way to factor that in. Like I just said, there's so many moving parts. Even the so-called experts, I don't know how they could truly know how this season is going to play out for teams and players.
Which could be, in some ways, a fun element of, you know, that you have so many unknowns that it creates that extra layer for, you know, for a fantasy team. But the injury question is a big one of what, even though they've been in camp, they just put the pads on. What is it, a week ago now, that at least the Titans? And you have the limited number of practices, like you said. So are they going to stack up? I mean, are we going to see more pulls and more, you know, tears and things like that? I don't think we know. I think there's really only one way we're going to find out. To your point, though, on the joint practices, I think you could see a difference from not having those, because think about it. If you're on the pass rush and you're going up against your teammate every day, I mean, you're not going to go full force. You just don't. But if all of a sudden you look across and you see Tom Brady, you know, there with you, and you're looking at him, I mean, even though it's a practice, you're going full force. I mean, you're going after it just because you're hitting on somebody that's not on your team. So I think there's a big difference from that, and they don't have that in the preseason. So the first time that they're going to have those types of emotions and going up against an opponent will be week one. So I'm curious to see the effects of that, just like you are.
Just like David Montgomery, as I said.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see this. And I get it. These things happen in training camp all the time. But I do wonder what the data is going to look like after this is over, this season over. Was it up? You know, was data – or were the injuries up considerably? You know, these guys have had little contact or a lot less contact than before. Their off season was way different than any other off season. So I don't know. Maybe the data points are to go back and look at the when was the last time they locked out for the off season? What was that, 2013? Does that sound right? Where they didn't, you know, they were locked out, and so they were all
before that.
Actually, it was before
2011.
Yeah, because
11, 12. Somewhere
that was
there.
That
I think
was,
it was 2011.
Okay. That was Jake Locker and Matt Hasselbeck's first year, because that was Munch. That was Mike Munchak's first year, because Fisher had left, and they went to Munch during the off season, and a lot of people speculated it was because of the familiarity, because the lockout was looming.
So were injuries up that year?
I don't know.
You know, I don't remember.
I think you have to be ready for more pulls, muscles, more injuries, plus guys having to miss if they test positive. I think the waiver wire is going to be a very, very,
very
high traffic.
Very
high traffic.
Active. Yep.
Well, did you guys see that the leading wide receiver in the XFL? I mean, he just got signed. I think you're going to see more of that. Like, that's with so many opt-outs, I mean, it's going to create opportunity, and I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but it's going to create opportunity for some of these undrafted, unproven guys that are hungry. And who knows, you may land a guy like a Khalif Raymond, like the Titans did last year, that is determined and wants to make it and get the best out of him. So, you know, you could see some new stars that in a normal year don't happen, don't come about, but because of the circumstances, because there's a spot for them, they're going to get that opportunity.
Chris Mason coming up at 1 o'clock. We will come back and wrap up the third hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. Giants have announced their second-round rookie safety, Xavier McKinney, has a fracture in his left foot and will undergo surgery. That doesn't sound good.
Ouch.
And David Mayo, their linebacker, has a torn meniscus. That's not good either. Speaking about the NFL injury fronts.
Yeah, there's a few. I just saw that Mike Shanahan said that the 49ers said that Brandon Ayuk, the rookie wide receiver at Arizona State, he's banged up. So we're seeing a lot of these young guys come in, and Kyle Shanahan coming out and saying that his rookie wide out is having some issues. So it goes back to our previous conversation. And you see him every year, you know, these types of pulls and things, but –
and they're not even in full pads yet in
right.
most cases.
Yeah. So how severe are they going to be? How many injuries are we going to see?
Yeah, the David Montgomery injury today was non-contact injury. I saw where, you know, we brought up with Ryan McGee, who joined us in the second hour. We're going to quickly just wanted to point this out because we did say, you know, about we brought up the NASCAR thing. There's been an article written out there and it involves the All-Star race at Bristol, which had 20,000 people plus in the stands at Bristol Motor Speedway, said the local public health officials have said they have not identified any COVID-19 cases or clusters directly associated with that All-Star race at Bristol. So I wanted to pass that along because we did bring that up in the interview with Ryan McGee, because NASCAR continues to have fans in the stands, and yet, you know, so far so good. You're not hearing anything coming from that. Okay, there was an incident with Doc Rivers. Willie, I'm going to kind of let you drive this conversation. I know we're going to hear a clip on it, and then we'll discuss.
Well, of course, last night the Clippers had an impressive win in the Game 5 series against the Mavericks. The Clippers have taken a 3-2 lead in that series. It's been one of the more exciting series. Luka Doncic's ankle is obviously bothering him, and the Clippers just were magnificent. If you watch any of that game, they were just ripping three after three, making huge plays offensively. They win the game. But it was upstage at the end, and it became a big subject on a lot of the shows afterwards, and then this morning nationally. Doc Rivers had some very emotional comments regarding what happened in Wisconsin. Another shooting of an African-American man, 7 times. It's on tape. You can see. Any reasonable person would have to say, what in the world was that guy thinking for that guy to get shot 7 times? The officer, what could have been going through his head? How was he trained? All of the questions that we have been talking about for so long during these last few months in the wake of what happened in Minneapolis. So it's heartbreaking. Doc Rivers, for some background, his father, of course, Doc Rivers, great NBA player, now longtime coach in the league. Doc Rivers' father was a police officer, so he has interesting perspective on it. But I thought he was very, very moving and captured me. I just stopped in my tracks when I heard this clip, because it just hit me. It'll make you a little bit emotional, I think, if you've put any thought in this, which I think a lot of us listening have done over these last few months. And we take another step back. Here's what Doc Rivers had to say.
It's just so sad. You know, what stands out to me is just watching the Republican convention, and they're spewing this fear, right? Like, all you hear Donald Trump and all of them talking about fear. We're the ones getting killed. We're the ones getting shot. We're the ones that we're denied to live in certain communities. We've been hung. We've been shot. And all you do is keep hearing about fear. It's amazing to me why we keep loving this country, and this country does not love us back.
And he goes on in that, and he says, I just am supposed to be a basketball coach. You know, that's he just wants to be able to do his job. It goes a little longer. I would encourage, if you want to hear the whole thing, you can probably find it pretty easily. But just emotional words from Doc Rivers. And now there's some talk. I was just watching Get Up this morning. I don't know what will come of it, but players on the Raptors were contemplating, you know, what to do. What do we do? They're already doing this, you know, movement with messaging while the games are going on in the bubble. So what's the next step? They even said everything's on the table, including even boycotting the game. I don't know if that is going to come to fruition, but you can see why the emotions are running really high based on all that's happened here.
Yeah, and I, you know, for him to say that about being a basketball coach, I think we're all realizing during this that we're more than just whatever the title we have says we are. That and the voices. I mean, we've talked about college players and speaking out against their coaches in their own schools and the voice that they have and the power that they have. Now it's learning to use that and using that power in the right way, not abusing it. But it's also showing that it can make a difference. And Doc Rivers is a very respected individual in not just basketball, but in sports. And you can hear that. You can hear the true raw emotion in his voice. And I think it's important for people to pay attention to that and not just always have the stick to sports mentality of, oh, I want to talk X's and O's. Well, sometimes it's bigger than that. And 2020 is a prime example of how it's bigger than that, with everything that's been going on. So I'm glad we played that. Glad we got to hear from Doc.
Here's what he said about the police, because with his dad being a police officer, here's his perspective on it. The training has to change in the police force. The unions have to be taken down in the police force. My dad was a cop. I believe in good cops. We're not trying to defund the police and take all their money away. We're trying to get them to protect us just like they protect everybody else. So just raw emotion from Doc Rivers, who I have a lot of respect for him. I just think he's a class act.
All right, we will come back and start things with hockey with Chris Mason. Our weekly chat with him coming up at 1 o'clock. And, boy, I tell you what, some crazy stuff. We'll get into Ellie Tolvanen. Some big games today, including a matinee game in the NHL. That starts at 2 o'clock. Islanders and Flyers, Philadelphia, big game for them. They do not want to get down 0-2 in this series. And it's been pretty interesting to hear people talk about how Barry Trotz's, the Islanders' style is boring. But they're getting it done. So Chris Mason is a guy that understands that system all too well, and we'll get his thoughts on that, because obviously people have come back and said, yeah, well, so boring that who knows, they may go all the way and represent the Eastern Conference. How boring is it? And so obviously the people would counter with that, but a lot of people are trying to throw out that it's boring to watch. I don't believe that, but it is interesting to hear that dialogue out there. We'll come back, fourth and final hour next.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SPINQUEST.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.